Psalm 95, verses 7 through 11. For He is our God, and we are the people of His pasture and the sheep of His hand. Today, if you would hear His voice, do not harden your hearts as at Meribah, as in the day of Massah in the wilderness, when your fathers tested me. They tried me, though they had seen my work. For 40 years I loathed that generation, and said they are a people who err in their heart, and they do not know my ways. Therefore, I swore in my anger, truly they shall not enter my rest.
Good morning. How's everybody doing this morning? You know what? Mike handed me a sheet with announcements on it, which is awesome because I had both of them written down, but I'd forgotten one of them already. So let me go ahead and get to that. First one is, some of you may have seen Bob and Krista a little earlier. They had to leave. Krista came down with a stomach bug, so they darted out the door. So think about them and their sickness. And also, next Sunday morning, Michael's sermon is going to be on forgiveness, and it's going to be like the marriage, divorce, and remarriage sermon a few months ago. It's going to be a question and answer session where you write down your questions and he'll answer those next week, rapid fire. By the way, I don't really want any part of those question and answers rapid fire. I would have you write them down this week so I could handle them for next week. But he's going to do that next week. But if you got some questions maybe in advance, maybe you want to go ahead and write a couple to him, or if you got questions about it, you can see him about that. Anything else that I need to say? I don't think so, besides thanks for being here. You gave me 2 weeks in a row, and I'm sorry for that. But you won't have to listen to me for a while. This morning, as you can see up on our board, we've got a map of what we call the land of Canaan. And this is a map during Joshua's time, when Joshua, he led the people into Canaan, and he took over the land of Canaan for them to live in. And this morning, what we want to talk about is we want to talk about this concept of a land of rest. The land of Canaan in that time was often called the land of rest. And Eddie just read for us a passage in Psalm 95 that the Hebrew writer brings up in Hebrews chapter 3 and chapter 4. So if you want to go ahead and turn your Bible, turn to Hebrews chapter 3 and Hebrews chapter 4. Go to Hebrews 4. That's the best way to start. We want to start by way of introduction. We want to see, and this map that I have here is the journey from Egypt to Canaan, to take over in that place, this land. And what we want to start with, and what we want to see, is that God had promised a place of rest to the Israelites, who were not called Israelites at that time. They were called Hebrews while down in Egypt. And He had promised them a place of rest. And so He took them out of Egypt with the great plagues. They go on their way, and as you can see, they go in the wilderness through the desert. And down at the bottom, you've got Mount Sinai. And then they go up, and you realize that there is a loop. And why is there a loop? Well, because they didn't get to go. That generation did not get to enter, but their children did. And you remember how it all went down, that they did not get to go into the land of promise. God tells them, I'm going to give you this land. You send spies into the land, go spy it out. And they send 12 spies in, right? And they come back and they say, yeah, it's a great land. It's full of milk and honey. And here are these huge grapes. Let me show you how awesome they are. But the people are huge. The cities are fortified. And we can't take it. 10 of those said that. But there were two, Joshua and Caleb, who said, we can take it. We can do it with the Lord's help. And so that generation, they all died in the wilderness, even including Moses. Moses was not because he didn't believe, it was because he did something later on when he disobeyed God, as we will see very important in the lesson. So they didn't get to enter, but their children did get to enter. Well, many years later, maybe some 500 plus years later, David writes Psalm 95 that Eddie just read for us. It says, today, if you hear His voice. Don't harden your hearts in the rebellion. When God says, go take the land, and you say, no, don't harden your hearts today, because I swore that they would not enter my rest. And that gets us to the Hebrew writer, where many years later, maybe some 500 plus years again later, the Hebrew writer writes this. It'll be in chapter 4. Oh, let's start in verse 1. Therefore, let us fear, if while the promise remains of entering his rest, that any one of you should seem to come short of. There is this rest that is still promised that he says you can come up short of, just like that first generation. And we want to start this morning, we're going to be looking at two different things. And if a promise of rest still remains, what is the rest from? And secondly, at the end of the lesson, very briefly, we're going to say, who got to enter and why, and who can't enter, maybe is the better way of asking that question. Think about what is the rest from? Well, I'm going to use what is said in the Old Testament about that as a launching path. It's from wandering. How many of you have ever lived in a tent, or you bounce from place to place from time to time, and you're just going about, and you're like, man, I really just wish I had my own place. Yeah, I know that feeling, man, it gets old. And you're looking for a place, and you can't find a place, and you got all the... It's old, you're wandering. Well, the children of Israel were wanderers. They were journeymen, as we sometimes might call them. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, I want you to turn there, and if you're in your pew Bible, that's page 103. This promise is made by the Lord through Moses, actually to the generation that was going to enter, to the ones who were going to go in and take the land, about how they were to live while in that land. So if you go to verse 8, he says this. He says, you shall not do all of what we are doing here today. Or you shall not do all at all what we are doing here today. Every man doing whatever is right in his own eyes. For you have not as yet come to the resting place and the inheritance which the Lord your God is giving you. You see, he says you're not there yet. Stop doing what you think is right because you're not to where God has promised you. There is a place of rest. An inheritance. I've got land back in Alabama. My grandmother owns 80 acres, and we grandchildren, we have a certain amount of land for ourselves if we go back and we take it. Well, I at this moment don't have any desire to go back to Alabama and build a house on that land. But I've got an inheritance. It's there. You could say I'm wandering. This is not my home. This is not my hometown, is it? I was talking to someone yesterday. They're like, man, you're going to be a northerner for life. And I said, I don't know. I might be a northerner for life. I don't know. It's not my home. They didn't even have a home. They were born in Egypt, which while God says about them while living in Egypt, in Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 19, when he's telling them that they need to love the foreigners, the aliens, the strangers, he says, because you were aliens, strangers in Egypt. Hebrews is what they were called while in Egypt. Apparently means one from beyond. And it sounds apparently like a stranger. It's someone who does not belong. Israel didn't belong in Egypt. They were there because of a promise that God made to Abraham back in Genesis 15, that his descendants would grow into a mighty nation, but they would be enslaved by a nation for 400 something years. And after that, he would bring them out to the land that he was giving. They knew all about the promise of an inheritance. They were tired of walking around. You know what's said about Christians? We too are aliens and strangers. You see that in the New Testament. You see that in 1 Peter chapter 1. Open up there, if you will, in 1 Peter chapter 1. If you're using your pew Bible, that's page 638.
this is the way he introduces the letter. The very first words out of his mouth, who the Apostle Peter is writing to. He says, Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to those who reside as aliens scattered throughout Pontus, Galatia, and he goes on to list all these different places. They were displaced from their home. Many of them probably from other places, but they're scattered all about. But yet, in chapter 2, he's probably talking a little more in the spiritual sense of their alienation. Verse 2, chapter 2, verse 11. Behold, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts which wage war against your soul. Here's the tendency of Christians. We forget that we're strange. We forget that we're aliens, that we've come from some, quote, spaceship. And we are living in a world that is not our own. But yet we try to make this world our home. We sing the song all the time, this world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. And there are a lot of people who have trouble singing that song. Because if they're honest with themselves from day after day, they think, man, I have gotten mighty comfortable in this world. I'm not looking for another home. I really like my apartment. I really like my house. I love that I've grown up in this area. I love the people here. And we get so comfortable in the here and the now that we're not looking for a place that is our home. We're not looking for that place that is a better home. But the other sentiment in that song is kind of the bridge to the chorus, where it says, and I can't feel at home in this world anymore. There are some people very close to me who don't sing that line, because they take that meaning, I can't feel at home in this world anymore. Meaning, I'll never be able to feel at home. I take it another way. I sing that of, I can't feel at home anymore. I have felt at home in this world for too long and too often. I can't do it anymore. I've got to look for that better home. And that's what the forefathers did. Look in Hebrews chapter 11, what it said about them. Again, that's page 35 if you're using the Pew Bible. In this great chapter of faith, it is said about Abraham and Isaac and Sarah and all of those, verse 13, that all these died in faith without having received the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. God had promised them, I'm going to give you a land, and it's going to be for your descendants. But they never got to see it. They never got to see their descendants live in that land, but they accepted it. They greeted it from afar. They were willing for it, because they realized that they were strangers and exiles in this world. And it says they were looking for a country. Keep reading with me, verse 14. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they had went out, they would have had opportunity to return. So they were looking for their own place. If they were looking for a place, they could have gone back to where they came from. Abraham could have gone back to where the Chaldees. He could have gone back to that place. His father was there. But yet the next verse tells us there's something better. But as it is, they desire a better country. That is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them. They have their eyes set on the right. the right home. And it's not an earthly home. It's not one that is here. It's one that is somewhere else. It is heaven. And it is better than anything that we come up with here. Man, it gets tired of wandering. And the Apostle Paul had this very same sentiment. I love the way he said it. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 5. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, if you're using your Pew Bible, that's page 611. And we're not going to take the time to read this whole passage, but you can go home and you can read it at home. But he says this, verse 1. He says, "We know that if the earthly tent, which is our house, is torn down," he's talking about our body. He calls it a tent. And Peter will do the same thing in 2 Peter chapter 1. He says, "We know that if this earthly tent, which is our house, is torn down, we have a building from God. A house, not made with hands, eternal in the heavens." Man, that's the kind of house we're looking for. Who would take a tent over a big house that will never corrupt? You'll never have to re-side it. You'll never have to repaint it. You'll never have to do any of that stuff in the physical sense. But it's everlasting. No renovations, no nothing will be needed. It is eternal. We wouldn't take a tent over that, would we? But yet we don't make those choices sometimes. We're wandering. This world is not our home. And so if you go down to verse 6, he says, "Therefore, even though we're in this tent, we're always of good courage, knowing that while we are at home in the body, we're absent from the Lord." That's what makes this tent so unglorious, in a sense, is we are not with the Lord. So verse 7, "We walk by faith and not by sight. For we are of good courage, I say, and prefer rather to be absent from the body and to be at home with the Lord." Now, won't it be cool that after you realize, man, this world isn't my home, and you get to walk in the home of Jesus, and you get to live with Jesus, I want to be like, "Yeah, I was glad I didn't make that world my home. I was looking for a better." Let's look for that land. Second thing we want to see that he promised to the Israelites is that he had promised them peace from war. That there would be rest from war. And you can look at various places. And I got this image up from Saving Private Ryan, and I've been thinking about this a lot. Because we were talking about this in our men's class, the last one on Ephesians 6. Well, sometimes we forget we're at war. I know I forget that all the time. Just like I forget this world is not my home, I forget that I'm in war. And I have this second picture up there to remind us of how brutal war is. There are casualties all the time in war. As Americans, we're kind of spoiled to think that we don't lose a lot of men. We lost a lot of men in Vietnam, and we're like, whoa. We lose a lot of people in 9/11 by terrorists, we're like, whoa. And we're not talking about, like this morning we talked about in class, 17,000 people died in 3 days because of David's sin. There's just a lot of casualties in war. And they would have lost people, even though in their wars, when they were going in to take Canaan, they didn't lose a lot of folks. The reason is God was with them. But you can see in Deuteronomy chapter 12, verse 10, the passage we were looking at a moment ago, if you want to flip back there, you would see that this is in the same breath of, "I'll give you rest, I'll give you an inheritance." And then he says, "I'll give you rest from your enemies." Pick up with me in verse 10. He says, "And when you cross the Jordan, and you live in the land which the Lord your God is giving you to inherit, and He gives you rest from all your enemies around you, so that you live in security, then it shall come about that the place in which the Lord your God will choose for His name to dwell, there you shall bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings, and so on and so forth." How many of you, I don't know if any of us have ever been in combat. I'm not sure. Some may have served in the military, but I'm not sure that any of us have ever been in combat. I get terrified thinking about the soldiers of World War II. When they were down in the trenches day in and day out. No real food, no real water, uncomfortable. All for what? Some physical thing. And in a sense, that's what Israel's battles were about. They were going in to take a land, and they were going, as the book of Deuteronomy makes very, very clearly, that they were going against nations that were greater and stronger than themselves. And we fight a battle that is greater and stronger than us, but yet God is able to fulfill His promise. God said, I'll give you the land, and God does just that. Look in the book of Judges. The book of Joshua, in Joshua chapter 21, page 128 if you're using your pew Bible. We see that God fulfills the promise of the rest of the wandering from wandering and the rest from war by the time of Joshua. And He says, the Lord gave Israel all the land in verse 23, which we had sworn to give to their fathers. And they possessed it, and they lived in it, and they gave them rest on every side, according to all that He had sworn to their fathers, and no one of their enemies stood before them. Not one. That is a mighty and powerful God. You remember, let's just take the first battle, for instance. Jericho. A heavily fortified city. And what does God do? He has the people march around the city. And the walls fall down on the seventh day, and they go in and they wax every last one of them, save Rahab and her family. They wouldn't have done that by themselves. They could not have stood against Jericho without the Lord. Because they go to Ai the next time, the Lord is not with them. Tiny little place. They didn't even send the whole army. And Ai kills their men. And they go running back. The thing is, like I said, we're in a battle. He gave them the land. He gave them that rest. And Christians are often called soldiers. You see, Epaphroditus in Philippians chapter 2, he is called a fellow soldier of Paul. And Archippus in Philemon chapter 1 and verse 2, he is called a fellow soldier. And Christians are told to fight. Look at Ephesians chapter 6. Maybe the most well-known about all of the soldier passages in the Bible and in the New Testament. But we want to look here at the enemy. Their enemy was greater and stronger. Our enemy is also greater and stronger. We don't like to admit that about Satan, do we? We don't like to give him any credit at all that that man has any power, that that being has any power. We don't want to give him anything at all. But let me go ahead and give you a guarantee. If you try to fight Satan one-on-one, you will lose every time. Because I read Ephesians 6, verse 10. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of His might. He who thinks he stands better take heed lest he fall. Sometimes I think I'm so strong and I'm just going to take Satan on the way I think I ought to do it. That don't work. I lose every time. But the Lord goes on here to tell us through Paul to put on the armor. Put on the armor. But he says in verse 11, put on the full armor of God, the whole armor of God, so that you will be able to stand firm against the schemes of the devil. You cannot go out unprepared. No soldier goes out without his gun. No soldier goes out without his battle, without his array, without his helmet. They would call him crazy if he left the barracks that way. Yeah, how many times we try to go out and we try to fight Satan without our sword, without our helmet? We just try to do it our own way. And I'll tell you what, battle wears you down. If you have been in a constant fight over some sin lately, you realize, man, when am I just going to give up? You ever get the temptation just to give up? I'm just going to let this one happen. I'm done. I'll fight another day. I'll let it go for a while and I'll fight another day. I've done that before. And it took me a really long time to ever get enough courage to ever try to fight it again. And it was killing me. And it was, as David was saying, it was eating me up from the inside. War tears you down. War is exhausting. You don't see an enemy come back or someone come back from war most of the time and they've got the same amount of energy and they're all full and they're all dancing and jumping because they've just won the battle. They come back happy. But many times they're hungry, they're thirsty. Imagine a life where you don't have to fight sin anymore. Where there is no sin. There is no temptation. You live in a place where you don't have to worry. You don't have to be, as we talked about last Sunday night, on the alert, vigilant, looking around for the devil who is like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. You don't have to be walking around like that. You're walking around focusing on Jesus and praising Jesus, and you don't have to worry about that. But yet, sometimes in this life, we don't want to put up a fight. We want to rest now. My body's tired. My soul is tired. We can beat the stronger enemy by being strong in the Lord and being strong in His armor. That's why we're encouraged to fight, to good fight. Paul would tell Timothy in 2 Timothy 2, fight. He said, I have fought the good fight in chapter 4, verse 7. I have kept the faith. And finally, there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness. And not for me only, but to all who have loved and appeared. And in chapter 2 of 2 Timothy, before he even says that, he encourages Timothy, and we've got to notice this because this is where our strength comes. 2 verse 1. You therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. Verse 3. Suffer hardship with me as a good soldier of Christ Jesus. We got to get to war. We fight now for rest later. There will come a time when we will have rested from our battles. That's not why we are in this earthly tent. We will always be fighting. Satan, in 2 Corinthians 11, who even disguises himself as an angel of light. The third thing we want to see is another devil. From wandering from war and from our works. And that is not promised to the children of Israel. As we see, the land of Canaan is going to be a place of rest from your wandering in a place. But yet we see that. And the Hebrew writer is the one who brings out this idea of rest from your works. Look at chapter 4 and verse 4 of the book of Hebrews, which is page 631 if you're using your pew Bible. Hebrew writer says, for he has said somewhere concerning the seventh day, and God rested on the seventh day from all his works. And so in verse 5, and again it says, they shall not enter my rest. So he's saying God's rested is what he's saying. And it's written somewhere that God has rested. So he says, therefore, in verse 6, therefore, since it remains for some to enter it, and those who formerly did not obey, he preached good news, they failed to enter because of disobedience. He says, somewhere it's written about God resting from his works. Remember where that's written by chance? Genesis chapter 2 is the very first time you've seen anything about it. He created the world in 6 days. And what did he do on the seventh day? The seventh day he rested. And he sanctified that day, that passage tells us. And then it's kind of like we forget that day for a while. And then the children of Israel, the Hebrews, they get brought out of Egypt. And they come to Mount Sinai and you get to Exodus chapter 20. And you've now got the Ten Commandments. And lo and behold, what's one of the Ten Commandments? Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. Why? Go to Exodus chapter 20, page 40. What's the purpose of it? I bet you can guess, can't you? If you don't already know. Look at verse 10. Verse 9. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath. That's a rest of the Lord your God. And in it you shall not do any work. You or your son or your daughter, your male, your female, all, don't do it. Verse 11. Why? For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them and rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. You know what they weren't allowed to do? And we know this very well. In fact, there's a man who was stoned because he was gathering sticks on the Sabbath day. He was working on the Sabbath day. They were worthy of death for working in that time. Imagine, some of you may work 7 days a week. Most of us probably only work about 6 days a week at max. 5 days if we're lucky. And you know when you got that scheduled day off? Like how excited you are when you leave work that day? Like you've been there and you're tired. It's been a long week. Right? We'll say you get Saturday off. You get Saturday and Sunday off. You get there, it's been a long week. And like, man, I can't wait till Friday gets here. Friday afternoon, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock on Friday afternoon. You got to do on Monday morning? Oh, man, here comes Monday morning again. You roll up. We got another case of the Mondays, we would say. Man, thankfully Friday comes around 5 days later. Whew, man. You keep going in this cycle. That's not about our rest right now. The Sabbath day given to the Israelites for them to keep in the law of Moses was not about them getting a day where they can sit back and they can go. It was a shadow of greater things to come. It was a shadow of the entire rest for the Sabbath rest for the people of God. Go back to Hebrews chapter 4. So there remains a rest, verse 9, for the people of God. Remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. That's what it's been all about. It's pointing us to this time of rest. As Christians in Ephesians 2 and verse 10, we have been created in Christ Jesus for good works. And in Titus chapter 2 and Titus chapter 3, that we were redeemed to be a people zealous for good works. And a people who are to be engaging in good works. If you're one of those people who is zealous for doing good things, and you are engaging in doing good things, I bet you're pretty tired. I bet you get tired of doing the right thing and no one else helps you out. Do you remember what Paul said to the Galatians? Do not grow weary in doing good. Don't give up. Don't get so tired that you just give up. Rest is coming. Rest is on its way. But it might be quite a ways away. Remember we looked at Jesus last week, right? His apostles have just come back from being sent out for the first time. And they come out and John the Baptist has just been killed. And so they're going to go off for some rest because they can't rest and they hadn't had any time to eat. They're going to go off to rest. And that was when he had to feed the 5,000 men, the rest of the crowd. And he wanted that rest. He was tired. But he just kept trudging along. And that's what we got to think about. We can't let our exhaustion now cripple us, defeat us. there will come a day when we will be resting all together. And there's a picture that we see in the book of Revelation about it. Go to Revelation chapter 14. This has always been one of the ways that I kind of describe heaven and hell, because that's the way Revelation 14 is described. There's a song, and I wish I remembered to look it up who sings this song, but some of you may have heard it. There's a line that says, there's no rest for the wicked. Money doesn't grow on trees. I've got bills to pay, I've got mouths to feed, and nothing in this world for free. And it goes on and it says some other lines that I can't remember. But the closing idea and the closing sentiment is, there is no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good. Meaning I'm dead. That is complete opposite of how the Bible describes what wicked people get. Revelation chapter 14 and verse 11. And the smoke of their torment goes up forever and ever. And they have no rest day and night. Those who worship the beast and have his image, and whoever receives the mark of his name. And we could get all wrapped up in what's the mark of the beast. Let's just say it's those who belong to Satan. Those who have been marked to belong in that way. What don't they get? Rest. For how long? Forever and ever. But keep reading verse 12. And here's the perseverance of the saints who keep the commandments of God and their faith in Jesus. So people who keep going, they persevere. What do they get? 13. I heard a voice from heaven saying, write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. Yes, says the Spirit. So that they may rest from their labors, for their deeds will follow. You don't give up all the good that you did. The good follows you, this says. But you finally get to rest. But yeah, we want to rest now. We're tired now. Rest comes later. So you might ask yourself the question, would I rather rest now for a little bit and be tormented and have no rest forever? I don't know. There's this thing called restless leg syndrome. Thank you. Where your legs just never feel tired. They're always feeling weird and all that stuff. I don't know if I have that or not, but I feel like I wake up like every hour and a half. There's some nights where I just don't feel like I rested at all. And that is a miserable morning. All eternity will be infinity times worse than any bad night of sleep that we get or any no sleep that we get. It's all worth the effort now for the glory that will follow later. So who didn't get to go in? Who went and who didn't get to go? And you can read all of these in Hebrews chapter 3 and Hebrews chapter 4. And I'm not going to actually call your attention to these passages except for you can write them down on the PowerPoint. I'm just going to address them. It's not everyone who heard the promise of the rest who entered. Those verses are made very clear in verse 16, 17, and 18 that just because they heard the promise didn't mean they entered. In fact, it was those who died. So why didn't they enter? Well, because they sinned. They were disobedient. They were told to go take the land. They didn't take it. Moses was told to speak to the rock and he struck the rock. He didn't obey. And so because they didn't obey, they couldn't enter the land. And it says that they did not have a believing heart. They didn't believe. They didn't believe because they didn't act upon the things they had been told. They knew that God was going to fight for them. They knew all those things. Yet they didn't believe. And so they didn't. He swore in his anger, they shall not enter my rest. Just look at that sink in for just a second. Someone has promised you something. They promised you something awesome. Maybe you're a teenager and your parents have promised you a car if you will make straight A's. You don't make straight A's. And they said, I'll help you. If you're having any trouble in class, I'll tutor you. I'll give you all the help possible. We'll do it. And you're a student who is capable of making all A's, by the way. You're not a D student trying to make all A's, but you're someone who's got that ability. And time comes, and you don't get it. And you find out the reason they don't get the A is because they didn't write one of their papers. Very simple. All you had to do was write a paper. They didn't get a zero on that project. They get a 10 on that project. They get an A in the class. How are you going to feel? Are you going to be upset with your child? You're going to be like, yeah, man, you did really good. You got all these A's and that B. That's a good. That's a good average. They didn't do what they were capable of doing. They didn't do what they had agreed to do. All the Lord has said, we'll do. They said at Mount Sinai. And the student says, I'll do it all, Daddy. I'll do all my homework. I swore my wrath. I shall not enter my rest. They get no call. Man, that hurts. That hurts that child. Yet it is what it is. They didn't believe it. And it's those, in chapter 4, verse 2, is for those who hold on to their assurance of faith. Those who believe and those who can hang on, that's who gets the rest. And we saw that in Revelation 14. And it's for those who have faith and they do believe. And their faith causes them to do something. They can enter. And it is those who obey, going right hand in hand with those who believe. And finally, and this is the one we want to close on, it is for those who strive to enter that rest. Look there in chapter 4. I said I wasn't going to look at any of them, but I lied. So forgive me for lying. Yeah. Chapter 4 and verse 11. Therefore, let us be diligent to enter that rest, so that no one will fall through the same example of disobedience. Remember we had a sermon not too long ago about diligence? We've got to put effort into not missing the promised rest. I don't just walk around day by day and all of a sudden I'm going to have this place of rest. No. I've got to be looking for a better country. I've got to be on guard and fighting against Satan day in and day out. I got to be doing good things. And if I'm not putting any effort into it at all, he's going to swear in his wrath, they shall never enter my rest. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. I never do. I don't think any of us want that. I think we want the rest. Let us be diligent to strive to enter that. Maybe this morning you don't have any hope of rest. Maybe you're not one of the Lord's. And so you're not one of the people of God. You've not been baptized into Jesus for the forgiveness of your sins and become one of His. Won't you do that today? Why don't you believe what He says of how God, when He makes a promise, He keeps it? Won't you do that? Or maybe you have started this, but yet you got your priorities wrong, you're living in the wrong place, or you're just not putting up a fight anymore, or you're not doing what you need to do. Won't you decide today to do it? Won't you do that this morning as we stand and as we sing?